Welcome back to another outstanding episode of The Film Stage Show, the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. I'm your host, Brian J. Rowan. I'm a writer and podcaster for The Film Stage. And I'm joined, as always, by my two cohorts, Danny King, writer for The Film Stage.
Hello.
And Nick Newman, associate editor for The Film Stage.
Rah!
Oh, man. We're going to get into the significance of that in a little bit. I will say that I, too, have been trying to perfect my non-committal grunts, but it's not working out so well for me. There's a mystery to carry you through the first half of this podcast. This is how we work for anyone who's just joining us for the first time. We're going to have a brief movie-related discussion before launching into a feature review of a new film in theaters. This week, we're going to be talking about Lawless by John Hillcoat, which is starring Shia LaBeouf, Jason Clarke, Tom Hardy, Guy Pearce, and, like, the ghost of Gary Oldman, because he's in there for like 2 minutes, but he makes an impact. Before we do that, though, I'd like to say if you're new here, you should subscribe to us on iTunes. You should check out our back catalog and come back every week for our new episodes. And if you like us, you should go and check us out on iTunes. Give us a star rating, give us a comment, or, you know, you can even just comment on the webpage on thefilmstage.com where these get published. That's good enough, too. We just want to know that you're out there and that you're enjoying yourselves as much as we are. So that being said, we can launch into our film discussion for this week. On The Film Stage this week, we had a pretty big feature article, which involved Terrence Malick's newest film, To the Wonder.
Written by...
Nick, do you want to say?
Me!
Yeah, exactly! See, we're not just a couple of schmucks who are on here because no one else wanted to. We're important people. Nick Newman, you wrote this massive, pretty comprehensive, you know, as much as a article about a movie that you haven't seen can be. Unless you have seen it, in which case I get to bitch more about the fact that I don't get to see anything first, even though I'm the host of this show.
I may be coming to you from a little Venice Square right now.
Can you hear the doves cooing gently in the background?
Yeah.
That's like generic European city stuff.
You can see the boats and the water and the people.
The lovers. Getting way off track. This conversation is meandering as much as the narrative of a Terrence Malick film. There, I've naturally segued us back to the discussion topic. This feature that Nick wrote was a rundown of the synopsis, everything that we kind of know about the film, including a soundtrack list, which is pretty comprehensive.
Yes, but, you know, compiled by Jordan Raup, I should say.
Thank you, Jordan. Jordan, of course, is the editor-in-chief of The Film Stage. I feel like I'm going to keep getting into segues about the inside baseball, how our website works. But this brought up a question, because the synopsis that we have, the official synopsis from the press packet, is quite long. I would say it's maybe 8 paragraphs. I could count it, but I refuse to. And then we just had a lot of other information there. And this is all, again, for a movie that no one had really seen yet. It hadn't had its premiere yet. I still haven't seen it, which is driving me slowly crazy. And the question became, if you're really looking forward to a movie like this, how much do you want to know going in? So we wanted to talk about that. And I wanted to kick us off a little bit just by saying that it's kind of weird to talk about this for a film that is by Terrence Malick. Because unlike most films that have a linear narrative and you can kind of tell where the spoilers begin and end. We talked about this for Prometheus as far as like trailers and how much is given away in the trailer. I don't feel like if I saw the last scene of a Terrence Malick film in a trailer, or if someone told me the full plot of the movie, that the movie experience would truly be broken for me. So I think it's an interesting way to look at it, just going from what director that you want to talk about. Because I can say, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that I want to know as little about a Christopher Nolan film as possible. But I could probably get a scene-by-scene rundown of the script, the shooting script of a Terrence Malick film, and still feel as though I'm getting a new experience in the movie theater. So that's my quick intro. Nick, why don't you give us your opinion about this?
When I got my hands on the synopsis, which maybe I won't show the specific details of for sake of decency, but when I got my hands on it, I...
Decency?
Well,
what did you have to do to get the synopsis?
let's not talk about that. Anyway, once I got it, I did hesitate for about a second, thinking, do I really want to read this? Because we know almost nothing about To the Wonder, except for the fact that it's a romantic drama, and it stars some people have been cut out, and that's kind of it. But then I thought to myself, you know, if you read the synopsis for something like The Tree of Life, you will not necessarily be spoiled, because it's more about what's in the imagery as opposed to what was in Malick's script, which are themselves very much altered and condensed and changed around once it gets to filming. So I figured, okay, the synopsis, it's fair game. And it's in the press release for the Venice Film Festival, so it's not going to give that much away. It is lengthy, and it reveals quite a bit about the movie. But once I finished reading it, I didn't feel like I had ruined anything about the movie for myself, because I was still left with plenty of questions, and I was trying to figure out how this would be visualized on screen, and just all of that. If I mean, I'm sure everybody listening has some familiarity with Terrence Malick, and they know that when it comes to his movies, it's more about what you're seeing than what you're hearing, or you know. So in this instance, I didn't have a problem reading it, but when it comes to other things, our first episode, we reviewed Cabin in the Woods, and I talked about how I had not seen a single second of footage from the movie, because everybody had told me go in with a, you know, with an open mind and be surprised and so on. And I'm glad I did that in that instance, but it's a very different, I'll assume it's a different kind of movie than To the Wonder. Maybe there's a whole lot more about it that we just don't know, but in the case of Malick, I think it's fair game.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, it's basically a mirror of what I said. I mean, when you first posted this, you know, when they were saying, hey, we got something big coming up, I was excited because I love Terrence Malick, and anything I can hear about his work is incredible to me. But at the same time, you know, you want to go into a film with a certain amount of, I guess, naivete. You want to be slightly blinded to what's going to happen. When we get into the Lawless review, actually, this will come into play, because, as I said, I read the book that the movie was based on, and that did affect my judgment of it. So I agree with you. If this hadn't been a Malick movie, I probably would have stayed away from it. And I agree with you definitely that even after reading these numerous paragraphs and...
Yeah, it's a very long synopsis.
Seriously, like halfway in, I felt like we'd already covered a normal movie's worth of thematic material, which is, you know, par for the course with Malick, whose last film was engaged with nothing less than the creation of humanity itself. Yeah, if it hadn't been him, I probably wouldn't have done it, but he's one of those people that can get through it. So this was a weird instance where I've learned so much more about this film than I would hope to learn about any other film, or even try to learn about any other film. And yet, I still feel like I'm still going to be surprised by this film. Danny, do you concur with this thought?
Yeah, I mostly agree with everything you guys have been saying. One thing about my reading of the synopsis is that it does have a lot of backstory details, and I only kind of read it once. So just thinking about it now while we're talking about it, I feel like I've forgotten a good amount of it, which is maybe a good thing, because it's not like I was reading it and taking notes about, like, you know, every character detail. So I feel like just in general, if you read through a premise like once, you can only retain so much of it, especially if it's as long as this one. But in general, I agree with you guys that the less you know about a movie, the better when going into it. Because if you ever come out of a movie thinking, I wish I would have known more about it before seeing it, which does happen, you can always just watch the movie again. But you can't, like, unlearn something major that you've heard before you see it. That's kind of like something that's a bad feeling whenever that happens. But with Malick, it is, like you guys have been saying, it is a unique situation. And I think that you can almost read the premise in an ironic way, because you can just read each sentence and then just picture how the movie is going to completely depart from that, because it is a Malick movie. So the idea of this, like, official press release information coming out is, it is something you can be comfortable engaging with, because you know that there is a very unpredictable artist behind it, and there is very likely an unpredictable experience behind it that some people have already seen, but that hopefully we'll be able to see soon.
Well, that was one of my things when I read it. I was like, man, I feel like I've heard of a lot that's happened in this film. And then I started thinking about The Thin Red Line.
Mm-hmm.
If you think about that and all the stuff that we'd heard before that film came out, you know, you could basically give a complete rundown of everything that happens in The Thin Red Line. You know, soldiers go to Guadalcanal and have to fight their way against the Japanese and blah, blah, blah. And then you see the movie and you go back and look at that same technically correct rundown, and then you just kind of laugh to yourself and go, okay, I guess that works.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a question of, you know, whoever wrote this, I'm assuming, saw the movie or was very intimately informed of what the movie was about. And the question then is just like, how much of the actual film did they translate beyond just simple narrative nonsense? Because Affleck himself, we were talking about this before we started to record, apparently not in it that much, even though he's like the main fixture of this.
Yeah,
synopsis.
Like his name is over it.
Apparently, Rachel McAdams is not in it that much either, from what I've read.
Which is crazy, because she's technically... I mean, this is the funny thing about a Malick film. And I was thinking about this when I was talking about Magnolia last week for my recently watched. You can tell someone what it's about, and in this case, To the Wonder is, in essence, sort of a love triangle. And you hear that, and you're like, oh, okay. It's really not. Like, you almost know going in that, like... some poor beleaguered PR person was just like, how the hell do I market this thing? Yeah. What do I latch onto here? Affleck himself, didn't he say that this made Tree of Life look like Transformers?
He did, yeah.
Yeah. And so when you hear something like that, I mean, all bets are out the window. So I would say that in the case of a Malick film, we all feel pretty safe reading stuff like this, just because of all the other stuff behind it that can't be put into a press release. But for other films by other artists, like, do we take this on an artist-by-artist basis? Like, if we were gonna review, I don't know, if you were looking forward to a film by, say, Michael Haneke, would you read as much about that film as you have about To the Wonder, or would you try to scale back a little bit more? You don't have to answer specifically about Haneke, but I mean, like, you get my point. Like,
okay, I'll bite. I've had the script for Django Unchained for close to a year and a half now, basically when it first went out online, and I've read 4 pages from it, maybe 3 of which are the first 3 pages, because I'm looking forward to that movie so much, and I don't really want to know. I just don't want to know what's going to happen going in, because I love Tarantino and I'm so excited for this film. But if, I don't know, if somebody handed me the script for like The Watch or something, why would I hesitate to, am I going to be afraid of getting spoiled on that movie? You know?
Precisely.
So it is very much an artist by artist basis, for me at least.
And Danny?
Yeah.
Not to impugn Akiva Schaffer's standing as an artist, director of The Watch, but yes.
No, we would never think you were doing that.
I feel like just in general, most of my experience with encountering a movie before seeing it is like through trailers and things, because I generally, like, the only kind of reviews I'll read before I see a movie is like blurb things. But one situation I definitely recall is with Inception, where I think maybe a year before or a significant amount of time before it came out, there was a leak as to like major developments in the storyline. And this was, I think, maybe when we'd only seen the teaser, which was obviously very cryptic. I actually went back and read that article after I'd seen the movie, and it basically did run down the entire plot, including like a lot of twists. And so that would have been a poor decision, probably. But yeah, I guess it is. You could approach this question on an artist by artist kind of mindset, but it's also, you know, sometimes they have no control over it, so you kind of have to be careful there.
Although sometimes you look at someone like Robert Zemeckis, who intentionally wants to put the entire film inside a trailer too.
Yeah, you know, like, who's like putting footage, you know, in master trailers that's not even in the movie.
Yeah,
That was another thing that I was gonna say. I mean, there are people like that who are perfectly fine giving away the entire plot beforehand. And I was gonna ask, you know, if a director basically said, hey, here it is, take it, does that affect the way that you would judge it in any way? I mean, I would still, depending on the director, of course, stay the hell away if I didn't want to know more. But does a director saying that, kind of, you know, giving his blessing to full disclosure, affect your treatment of spoilers or plot details in any way?
I mean, I don't know. It's such a specific issue. I kind of have trouble answering it in any broad sense.
All right. I'm down with that. I do want to talk a little bit more about this, but the best way for me to do that for myself personally, like I said, would be to get into our feature review of Lawless. So this is going to be the rare day where our discussion topic actually greatly influences my section of the review anyway. Does anyone else have anything to say about this before we segue into Lawless?
I also read the Wettest County book, so I'll be be interested to hear what you're about to say.
All right, excellent. Nick, you haven't read Wettest County, right?
No, I haven't.
All right, excellent. We've got a really good balance going on here then. But yeah, so thank you for listening to our discussion topic. Now we're going to get into our feature review of Lawless, again, directed by John Hillcoat, starring Tom Hardy, Shia LaBeouf, Jason Clarke, Guy Pearce, Jessica Chastain, Mia Wasikowska, Gary Oldman, and Noah Taylor.
Noah Taylor?
Yeah, Noah Taylor's in there.
You'd like to come for rob me sometime.
I know who you are.
Oh yeah, who's that?
One of them Bond Grant boys. My daddy says you boys are the worst thing ever to hit Franklin.
You tell your daddy I said hi.
We got a chance to make a good stack of money here.
Pure corn whiskey, so white light. Come on, Forrest, see you dance.
I ain't dancing for you two.
Come on.
It's impressive.
I respect you, Bond Grant.
You want any more of this stuff?
As much as you can bring me.
All right, that was from the trailer for Lawless. Lawless is, in its most basic sense, the tale of three brothers in Franklin County, Virginia, who are bootleggers during Prohibition, and their attempts to maintain control over their bootlegging enterprise as the world on the outside tries to encroach in upon it. And Nick, you had seen this before the rest of us, I believe, and you'd been kind of teasing how good it was.
Yeah.
So why don't you kick us off here and give us your brief spoiler-free rundown of your feelings of Lawless?
I loved it. I thought it was incredible, just an incredible amount of fun. It's a movie that knows exactly what it's doing. It wears its heart on its sleeve. It doesn't really have many pretensions about trying to be an epic drama set in the roaring... Well, the 30s weren't roaring, they were awful. The way I would look at this movie is just that it's like a very, very good piece of pulp. And I think in a summer where a lot of movies took themselves too seriously, like The Bourne Legacy, or maybe didn't take themselves seriously enough, like Men in Black 3 or some crap, this is the perfect antidote to that. And I think it's kind of a shame that it's actually coming at the end of the summer. We could say this is the last summer movie, if this even is a summer movie anymore. But I think it has a great atmosphere to it. There's a very rich feeling to the cinematography and the set design and the costuming. And there's a crackling script with a lot of great dialogue and some nice plot developments. And of course you got that cast, who I think are... a killer bunch, literally. Right.
I want to know how that was written in the script.
Damn. No, that was just me going,
And you didn't choke this time, which is good.
No. Callback.
Callback. Danny, what were your thoughts on Lawless? And were they affected at all by the fact that you'd read the book first?
Well, to start with just something Nick said, he mentioned a lack of pretensions, and I think that is kind of a key to enjoying this movie, because it's at kind of like, I haven't checked within the past day or so, but it's been hovering around like 60% on Rotten Tomatoes, and not that that's the holy grail of a film's reception, but I do feel like there's a sense that this movie on paper felt like a total knockout, and the reality is that it's just kind of a very simple piece of entertainment, and it doesn't really pass itself off as more than that, which I like. But I think just the idea of the pedigree behind it maybe like created unrealistic expectations or something, because there was really nothing in the movie that I felt there was nothing that happened that felt like it shouldn't have happened, or there was no effect in the movie that it felt like that Hillcoat didn't have control over. It just seemed to me like a very controlled, well-made piece of satisfying entertainment. In terms of the book kind of has this third, like about a third of the book is from the perspective of this journalist, Sherwood Anderson, visiting Franklin County during like the mid-1930s. And when I was reading the book, I had a feeling that that wasn't going to be in the movie at all, because it would have been weird. And it even makes the book a little bit confusing at times in terms of the, like, when events are happening. But that was one of the keys to me in terms of like solidifying the movie as a very simple piece of work, because the book does have these time jumps and these alternate perspectives, and the movie is very much the opposite of that in terms of how simple it is. And I like that. So
yeah, no, I agree with you that the excising of that third narrative was a really good choice. Because that, I think that if they had left that in, it would have been that sort of a prestige level pretension, maybe, that you said that this was lacking.
Yeah.
Which is, it's true. You look at this movie and you see the cast and you see John Hillcoat, whose two major films, The Proposition and The Road, I mean, they're still grim, gritty, violent genre pieces, but they have a touch to them. There's a weird X factor that just kind of imbues them with more than just pulp. And so you see that, and then you see it's by the Weinstein Company, which is just like a vacuum sucking up awards. And you get this expectation that it's going to be that kind of prestige film. And I would say, like, after about 10 minutes, you get past that. And it's still a very good film. And I don't have a problem with the fact that it's not striving for something more. Though it is odd that, just because of the aura that the festival has, that this premiered at Cannes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, I was watching, I was like, this thing premiered at Cannes? That's nuts. Never having been there, I say this purely as an outsider. And I know that, you know, there are bound to be people who say that to themselves as well. I really enjoyed this film. It might be... This is going to sound like damning with faint praise. It is the least disappointing film I've seen this year.
Oh, wow.
Well, I mean, it's... And I'm not saying that I was disappointed by it. I'm saying, you know, you had talked about the last movie of summer. I mean, this is a movie filled... This is a summer filled with movies that should have been a lot better than they were. I don't know. Just looking back at, like, The Avengers and The Bourne Legacy and just movies like that. Fucking Dark Shadows. Like... Dark Shadows. I don't know. There's just this sense, and every time I look back at the summer, I mean, there are the unqualified triumphs. Still love The Dark Knight Rises. Still love Paranorman. I've actually seen Paranorman once more since we recorded that episode. But there's something about this film. I feel like I walked in and I wanted something from it, and it just gave it to me, and it was really good.
Yep.
And I walked out, and I was just like happy again. You know how that is. Like you've gotten kind of burned down by so many other films that you'd pinned your hopes to, that to have one just deliver on it for you, it's like getting out of a string of really bad relationships and going on a really great first date.
Yeah, after I saw this movie, I walked out and I was like, yeah, that's right.
That's
exactly
like.
What I wanted.
That is exactly what you feel like after seeing this film. My one issue, if it could even be called an issue, because it's really my fault, is that I read the book. So there were certain plot turns that I kind of wish I'd been ignorant towards, if that makes sense. You know, there's a palpable sense of dread, and I could feel it on an academic level, but I knew it was coming, so I couldn't let it envelop me like some other people probably could. I went to this movie with two friends, and they were like, edge of your seat. At some point, one of them turned to me and was just like, this is unbearable. And I was like, yeah, I know that. In a very, very specific way, but unfortunately I know what's happening, so a little bit of a letdown. But again, that's more like, it's not the movie's fault. Like, this is a very good film. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed all the performances. I think Shia LaBeouf got saddled with an unfortunate role, just because Jack is... He's
very much a Shia LaBeouf character.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a problem for him. I mean, obviously towards the end he becomes something else, and every film about... you know, lawbreakers and men on the edges of society has that one character who's not good at it, but still wants to appear to be good at it. And he fills that role very well. He's the guy who wants to be a gangster. He's kind of an idiot. His eyes are bigger than his mouth. I mean, there's so many different ways to say that he basically is an imbecile who gets people into so much trouble throughout this entire film. And, you know, the arc of him growing up and everything like that works for me. But it is just unfortunate that you're like, this is just Shia LaBeouf again. He's like the kid from Even Stevens again, just causing mischief and everyone else has to fix it for him. but no, I like this film. I liked it a lot. I want to see it again. And I think having seen it the first time and just knowing what's going to happen, and this is going to sound like complete insanity since I said my first viewing was hampered a little bit by knowing what's going to happen, but now that I know how the film itself is going to play out, I think I'll actually be able to appreciate it more on its own merits. Does that make any sense? Because every time I tell that to someone,
yeah, no,
they
kind
of look at me cockeyed. But yeah, really good film, and I definitely recommend that everyone listening to this right now should see it. And see it with friends, and then make those friends Bing friends, because, dear God, I want this movie to make some freaking money. Because I love John Hillcoat, and that man does not work enough. It's been like 3 years between every movie.
Mm.
And sometimes it's just like, you know, post-production on The Road went long, and I'm sure that this one probably had some similar problems. I mean, I just want more from him, and I need him to be successful so that they will give him more projects. Please do this for me, Internet. Give me some more Hillcoat.
Yeah.
I've already watched The Proposition like 20 times. I'm going to burn a hole through that DVD. But yeah, that's our basic thoughts on this. And I think now it's safe for us to get into spoilers. Would you say so, gentlemen?
Sure.
Yeah.
Danny, you didn't sound so sure.
Oh, no, I'm definitely sure. It's okay. Spoiler time.
Absolutely. All right, spoilers for Lawless. Well, I was saying that Shia LaBeouf's character is the basically the kind of idiot troublemaker. Did you feel like his arc was well paid off towards the end? And specifically, I mean, what did you think of the narration that was kind of bookending and showed up a little bit in the middle? Like, did you feel that that was a good service to the story? Because if I had to choose one thing that I thought it fell down on a little bit, it was making his arc as much of a through line as it seemed to want to be.
Did I have a problem with the narration, basically, is what you're asking?
Yeah, I mean, the narration, did you feel that they did a good enough job of modulating his growth from Pipsqueak
narration,
the killer?
Yeah, I thought it was fine. I maybe groaned a little bit when the movie opens with it because it feels expected, but he doesn't really narrate much of the movie, and you forget after a while that he even has that position. And when it comes to his arc, yeah, it's a very familiar arc. You've seen it play out many times before, so you know essentially what's going to happen the second Guy Pearce shows up, right? But no, it didn't bother me because I thought it was well handled. I found it engaging, and it was fairly believable because it's not completely over the top the way it resolves itself. It felt as natural as it could, in the sense that it's still a movie arc, but you believe it.
Okay, I just wasn't sure how that would play for other people. Like I said, I didn't have too much of a problem with it. It was just, and almost part of it, to me at the end, it felt like, I didn't want to say this in the normal review because I thought that this might be a little bit of a spoiler. It felt like a little bit of a Prohibition era Goodfellas.
No.
No?
Nah.
Really?
The
entire last line basically is the same thing as Henry Hill in Witness Protection.
He gets to live like a schtuck. They serve him egg noodles and ketchup.
I was about to say, he's eating egg noodles and ketchup.
Regrets! I've had a few. That's from the end of Goodfellas.
You sing more on this than I would expect you to. And yet, yeah, whenever I ask you to, you don't.
No, I don't. I'm not your lapdog.
Jesus. all right. Damn. About to get combative up in here. No, I was saying, you know, Shia LaBeouf, he has that moment where he's saying, you know, when everyone's in bed and I'm sitting alone, it gets awful quiet out here. And it's that same kind of wistful, you know, it's like, I'm glad I'm out and I'm glad we're safe and I'm glad we're together. But I miss those days. Like, that flash and that energy is gone. And, you know, throughout the movie, I mean, he basically does this, like, I could make a compelling argument for this, I won't get into it too much, but like when he throws the money at his brother Forrest's feet And Forrest says, you know, look at you swagging around like you're Al Capone. I can't do the Tom Hardy voice.
Great line. I love that line.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, again, let's just take a second to stand in awe of Tom Hardy. I don't know what he does to his vocal cords. I've never been able to do a convincing impression of him in any film. And it kind of annoys me. But, I mean, that's the same thing as when Henry Hill shows up at his mom's doorstep in that freaking three-piece suit with his shiny shoes, and his mom's like, oh my god, you look like a gangster. Like, there's a similar thing where this person is aspiring to a certain lifestyle, and yeah. they have to learn the brutal, harsh realities of it.
Right, but when I said a very familiar arc, I mean that you've seen it in movies that go past Goodfellas.
Yeah.
So it's true, that it is, didn't come to mind for me because I've seen it enough other places. If it was restricted to Goodfellas and two other films, then yeah, I'd agree.
Okay. Again, I like this movie. I'm not, and this isn't even like The Avengers where I liked it with qualifications. I'm just trying to explore it a little more because I felt like there was a little of that in there. Guy Pearce, we didn't talk about him enough in the non-spoiler section.
Amazing.
That guy's a
trip. A less conventional character than Jack.
Holy God. Yeah, I feel like they were like, you know, Jack's a pretty common archetype. Like, how can we balance that out? It's like, how about we get Guy Pearce, shave off his eyebrows, give him some, like, calfskin gloves.
And greasy hair.
Yeah, Brill cream his hair back.
Tell him to move like he's made out of oil.
Part in it. Like, oh my God.
And that is something, I don't know if I was just like reading the book too fast, but there definitely wasn't that kind of a characterization in the book for that character. That felt like something that was mostly in the adaptation. Or am I wrong?
I believe, I'm with you on that. I don't feel like they characterized him that way at all.
Yeah, like this is an insane creation. And it's awesome.
He talks in that ridiculous accent.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Like, I still...
Did you ever see what a Tommy gun does to a mortal?
Yeah, gosh, I was about perfect. To actually say that same line. It's like, do you mean a mortal?
I love that his gun motivation does to a mortal? Is like proving that they're not immortal because it's just such an absurd motivation. Like when he's shooting everyone at the end, he's like, see, they're not immortal.
Yeah, and it's funny because like, and this is one of the reasons I want to see it again. Because you keep hearing this common comment about these brothers that, like, they're indestructible, they're immortal. And they do a really good job in this movie of making you see that and understand that in very subtle ways. And this is one of the things that I kind of really like about Hillcoat, is that he doesn't linger on things so long that it, like, underlines them. But he allows you to return to his movies enough to see what he's doing. Like, Tom Hardy's character, Forrest, he uses brass knuckles to just knock the ever-loving shit out of everyone.
Mm-hmm.
But he never, like, puts them on in that kind of affected Hollywood way where, like, he slides them on and then, like, makes his fist and, like, lets everyone see it. He's always mm-hmm. secreting them on, like, just outside of his pocket and then immediately taking them off so that he can give off this air of like being an indestructible force of nature, and no one ever sees the fact that he's just using this like band of steel on his hand. I mean, Guy Pearce's character has a lot of this. There's so many subtle screwed up things about him that, you know, aren't underlined too much, but that are given enough that you can see the full character behind this ridiculous human being. I don't know, things like that really appreciate those. And this idea of the brothers being invincible. I mean, there comes a point where Forrest gets his throat slit, and the common knowledge is that he just, like, held his throat together and walked to the hospital 20 miles in the snow. And he believes it. And he was there. And it turns out that Jessica Chastain's character, whose name is currently escaping me, even though I read the book, which is weird. Maggie.
Maggie?
Yeah,
Maggie.
Kept wanting to say Emily for some reason. I have no idea why. But Maggie at some point says, you know, I don't want to have to drive you to the hospital again. And just the look on his face when she says that, he's like, you did that? I thought I walked. It just gives you this
idea. Yeah, I really like that subplot.
Yeah. It gives you this idea of like how their legend is so all-encompassing that they can't even divorce themselves from it. And I loved that. I loved that idea. And it came to a point where they had survived so many things and bounced back from so many things that I could understand Guy Pearce's character, whose name was Charlie Rakes, Special Deputy Charlie Rakes. I could understand at the end him just being like, are you freaking crazy? They're not immortal. And just wanting to, like, just kill one of them. Just to show. And even though I read the book, this is actually funny, even though I read the book, and even though I kind of knew it was going to happen, I was surprised that Forrest was alive at the end.
Yeah, he took a lot of damage.
That man should not be alive. And that's another thing that I love about Hillcoat's movies, because in a normal movie, knowing what I knew, I wouldn't take the time to think, like, oh, maybe they're actually going to kill him. But Hillcoat has such a way with violence that I just can't imagine. Like, in a movie, I could see someone get shot 20 times in a movie, and if I know that they're a protagonist, I can be like, he's going to live. Because all of the bullets will be his shoulders and, like, legs, and everyone will survive those. Just because that's, like, that's Hollywood. But, I mean, I see him get shot, like, 3 times. I'm just like, he's dead. There's no way that those ragged, bleeding holes in his body are going to allow him to live. And Shia LaBeouf gets shot once, and he's barely standing. So it's like, how can they possibly survive these things? But they do. And that's one of the reasons why Hillcoat's movies are so much more effective for me than a lot of other directors, especially in terms of creating stakes. Because these are humans who react to violence done upon them like an actual human being. And that works for me. I don't know if anyone else has thoughts on that.
Yeah.
What did we think of the rest of the cast? Because I found it interesting how Gary Oldman is in this movie, but for literally 2 scenes.
I mean, yeah, and I really liked his character, too.
But what two scenes were those?
He, like, looked cool.
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of a shallow reason to like a character, but he just looked really, like, he looked like that part.
Well, if you think about it,
I feel like they did get a lot out of him, though. There's a great, I don't want to say it's a visual gag, but the way a scene involving him is directed is quite funny. It's a sort of a long take. I'm sure you know what I'm referring to.
We are in spoilers.
It involves a shovel.
Yeah, so. There we go.
And you're not expecting that to happen in that shot, but the way it plays out, I mean, it's brutal, but it's really funny. And I think that speaks to the movie's strength of being able to balance that and not make it feel incongruous to each other. And I also really like Jessica Chastain, too. Her character was pretty interesting. Not deep. You know, you're getting mostly what's on the surface and what's briefly said, but it was well played, and she was fantastic.
Yeah, no, I agree.
Yeah. I think my MVP is still Hardy.
Hardy was pretty amazing.
I just love how physical of an actor he is, just in general. Like, if you look at so many of his recent movies, like Warrior or The Dark Knight Rises, like, there's just, you're getting so much from his body all the time that it's just mesmerizing to watch.
Yeah.
I'm at a point now where...
It is funny how this is 2 straight movies he's made with Gary Oldman where he's unintelligible. And it's also his 3rd movie with him, and I would say this is the 2nd best. Just going to throw that out there.
It's his 3rd movie with Gary Oldman?
Yeah. Tinker Tailor.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's this right.
Is, okay.
That's the best one.
My friend
movie.
My friend was saying this after we saw this movie, because she didn't realize that this was Gary Oldman, and she keeps saying, how old is he? Like, is he some kind of immortal? Is he a shapeshifter? Because every freaking film,
he's not immortal.
You ever seen what a Tommy gun does to Gary Oldman?
That's pretty good, actually.
Oh, really? All right. Yeah. Halloween costume. Holy God. All right. I don't know how much sway we have in the popular culture or with people who listen to this, but I'm going to say right now that if someone out there actually does a Halloween costume where you are Charlie Wakes from Lawless, and if you send me a photograph of this at podcast@thefilmstage.com, heaven help me, I don't know what I will do, but I will do it. I will give you some sort of prize. This is a completely independent personal thing, just because I want to see someone actually follow through with this.
That would be cool.
Wouldn't that? That'd be awesome. Make me proud, Internet. Just do this for me. Give me this win. And now I can't remember what I was going to say because I'm so enamored with the idea of someone actually doing that. But yeah, I mean, Gary Oldman, 2 scenes, but I mean, when I think back at this movie and some of my favorite scenes, like, both of them are his. He's in there and he's so good and he makes such an impact. And, you know, you're saying that looking cool is kind of a weird reason to like a character. I mean, that's basically Jack's reason. And when you see Gary Oldman, like, as a gangster, rocking a Tommy gun, It's like, hell yeah, I'd look up to that guy. I don't care what he does. I mean, I'm at the point now where I just, every time Jessica Chastain's in a movie, it's just like, can we just assume that she's great? Yes. All right, great. Moving on. Like, her, Tom Hardy, like, I can't, these are people who I can't pick out a performance, even in a less than awesome movie, I can't pick out their performance as being incredible.
No, she was great in The Help, and that movie is crap.
Yeah, that movie was, I got forced into watching that. And I was just like, when is Jessica Chastain going to come back?
I know. That I was in the exact same situation. When she's on screen, it's like, this is really good. And then...
I'm just like, I hate this movie so
much. Were you guys like frustrated with the ambiguity in that movie? Because that's kind of like what threew me off.
Like, well, moral gray area in The Help was really, I'm just like, whose side am I on? Like,
yeah, I had no idea.
I'm all for nuance in filmmaking, but this just seems willfully deceptive. I will say, someone else I enjoyed in this movie that hasn't been getting too much credit thrown in their way, Dane DeHaan, I think is his name, from, he was in...
Chronicle.
I kept wanting to say Clueless. I don't know why. but yeah, the found footage superhero film. And I liked him in that. My one problem was that his murder streak, spoilers for Chronicle, I mean, from the trailer. I mean, he kind of flips like a switch. I don't know, kind of goes carry towards the end. But I liked that in this he was able to exercise a bit of non-psychopathic, like, theatrical muscles. You know, you can tell that he's going to have something beyond being that creepy kid who wants to murder everyone.
I think
he just wants to make moonshine.
Yeah, not even that. He wants to soup up cars.
I just want to point out that I love how casually, when you said Chronicle, how casually you said found footage superhero film. Like, it's just become a common thing in our culture. Like, that was just a sad moment for me. that phrase can be said so casually.
I apologize. Do you know that?
No, like, it's not your fault. I'm just putting it out there.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't make it. I haven't brought us to this point, but I hate that I'm the one who has to, like, reveal that to you. to crib a line from The Newsroom, Brian is the Knight of Mirrors. Hey, wow, the character's name is even my name. That worked out really well.
What makes America the greatest country in the world? You do.
Oh, I fucking hate that show so much.
Yeah.
Is this going to be another thing that we're going to have to talk about, Nick?
Yeah.
Just like fucking Scott Pilgrim.
Mm. Both featuring Allison Pill.
What Tommy Gunn does to Scott Pilgrim? Oh, God. That's going to be my line now, isn't it? Yeah. And then I wanted to, the final thing, Mia
Wasikowska.
Wasikowska. Are the W's in her name V's, or are they...
That's how everybody pronounces it, so...
Wasikowska?
Wasikowska.
So the second W is a W.
Yeah.
God damn. All right. Anyway, I really liked her, and I don't know that I've seen her in many things, but I'll seek her out because of this film, and not just because she's gorgeous. I'm not that shallow, but she was really good. And one of my favorite scenes, actually, just from pure production design and directing and oddity, was the scene where Jack Bondurant, Shia LaBeouf's character, goes to her church, because I remember that from the book, and I wanted to see how they'd play that out, and I really enjoyed the way that scene went. I mean, they're him and the hand motions. I mean,
yeah, that's just a weird moment, but they pulled it off well.
Yeah, it's a world that you don't see. And I mean, in a movie like this, you know, where you kind of feel like, all right, you know, there's going to be the shootout and the beating and all this other stuff. Like, that's just the type of thing that gets thrown in there, and you're like thrown for a loop, and you're automatically off your feet. So, yeah.
Yeah, it was a sort of a disconcerting scene to watch because he kept thinking he was going to throw up or something. Her.
Yeah.
That could have been worse, yeah.
It could have been much worse. That was another scene where I was like, I've read the book, but I'm still absolutely unsure what's going to happen here. Because, you know they're going to make changes. Some of the big things, you know, they're going to keep, like the throat slitting. But, in that scene I was like, I can't... There's part of me was like, I can't imagine that they would do that in a film, like have a dude throw up on a girl. But then the other part of me was like, we've seen some pretty horrendous and heinous shit happened in this film already, so I wouldn't be surprised by them doing that just because it's awful. Most haunting image for me from this film is when the bootlegger is tarred and feathered and placed on the porch, and you think that he's dead, and then the head moves.
I thought that was funny.
You thought that was funny?
Because Tar and Feathering, it's a funny, you know, I mean, it's horrible, but it never happens today, so I think you can laugh about it. That's what the Founding Fathers did when people came to collect the taxes. Yeah. So
and you hear that.
I thought it was amusing.
And you think about it from, like, Looney Tunes, because they would do that, or, like, Home Alone, where he gets the feathers from the pillow blown on him. But, I mean, like, the stark, horrifying reality of it, it's just fucked up.
Definitely not a moment for the kiddies.
No.
Leave them at home, folks.
Yeah. This is one of the few films that I went to where there weren't children in the audience. And I was like, oh, thank God. Someone finally like made an intelligent choice and left their child at home. I went and saw 28 Days Later and there was a three-year-old sitting next to me. Like, we live in a messed up world where parents do not believe in getting babysitters. Any final thoughts on this before we sign off? I feel like we've done a pretty good job of basically...
I just want to say I had read this around the time of Bruno at Cannes, but that was months ago, so I forgot this little detail. I was enormously pleased when they suddenly played a bluegrass cover of the Velvet Underground's White Light, White Heat.
Yeah.
I just heard White Light and I was thinking, what is that? Because that's one of my favorite songs, and then suddenly it launches into that, set to this really nice montage. And I think that was the moment where I just decided officially that I loved this film. That's where I gave in.
I actually, I've begun drinking moonshine.
Oh.
Yeah, it's really good. Moonshine and corn whiskey. And my favorite brand of corn whiskey is called Lincoln County Lightning. So every time that they talked about their White Lightning, I wanted to like silently raise a glass and take a drink. And part of me was going to say that in the spirit of this film, I wanted to do this podcast absolutely drunk, but I decided not to.
Yeah, we're recording this. It's only 12:59.
That doesn't mean anything to me.
No.
I worked.
One of my friends pointed me out to this article where Shia LaBeouf is like doing all these crazy method acting things
for Nymphomaniac.
So I think if the article's true, I don't know. I didn't check out the source, but apparently drank a lot of moonshine on the set. And he did acid for an upcoming movie.
Yeah, and, I read that article.
He's going off his rocker a little bit, but it's entertaining.
Well, I mean, if you'd done 3 Transformers films, you'd be a little nuts too.
you need a transition, yeah.
Oh, right. I wanted to say one thing. Jason Clarke, who plays, I think he's the middle brother, Howard.
Yeah.
He is not in this movie a lot. I mean, he gets a couple of scenes and he's an important character, but he's definitely overshadowed by Shia and Tom. Look at me. Look at me being all familiar. But I really liked him. And I thought that his acting, just in the understated kind of background way, the physicality and the look in his eyes was really, really good.
Yeah, I think that's actually a tough role because he's supposed to be like the enforcer. And yeah. Hardy is already so intimidating. So he could have easily seemed like just like a second rate kind of enforcer guy, but I thought he worked well.
Yeah, I mean, that scene where it's funny that you say that, because you see this and you see that Tom Hardy's in it, and you just kind of assume, like, Tom Hardy's going to be the badass, but he's usually just sitting there and philosophizing, and...
likes to relax.
Yeah, he's a very relaxed guy. Even before he gets his throat cut, he's always been a fan of the leisure, but he says when the deputies come up to serve a warrant, he says, "Have you met Howard?" And Howard just busts out screaming, beats the ever-loving shit out of these two guys, and is going to force feed one of them some gasoline. And I mean, it's funny because up to that point, you've seen him in a moment of violence, you've seen him kind of hanging out and getting wasted, but that one scene like crystallizes like everything about that character. Like, could be a complete and utter sociopath, or he could just be the one among them who, when he's actually not, you know, passed out drunk somewhere he shouldn't be, he could be the most expert artist in the form of violence that these brothers use to keep the world on their side. So I just wanted to give a special shout out to Jason Clarke, because I feel like in the rush to praise everyone else, he wasn't getting his fair due. And I actually hope that somewhere out there exists a director's cut where he gets a little more screen time.
Yeah. Apparently there is a longer cut of this movie because I won't name names, but someone saw this movie back in October, which is like a lifetime ago when it was still called Wettest County in the World.
Yeah.
And they said that the film was longer and had, I think there was more Gary Oldman, actually.
Really?
Which it's surprising that they excise him in any extent, to any extent, mm-hmm. but apparently his scenes were adjusted. So I'm not saying there will be a director's cut. I have no idea, but it's not outside the realm of possibility.
I would love that. Did this unnamed source of yours make any qualifications as to which they found better, or were they both good but one gave a little more?
I don't believe they have seen Lawless.
Okay. Well, get back to us on that, because I'd be interested to hear. I'm sure that, I mean, like we said, we loved this. I would just be interested to know if the movie remains the same quality, but perhaps has a different flavor.
Well, I do wonder if when it was set to open in the fall, maybe it had a more prestige aura to it.
Feel to it, yeah.
Maybe a more Oscar-y flow.
Oscar-y flow.
Yeah.
That's all right. That's an excellent phrase to end this review on. Oscar-y flow. So yeah, once again, we all think you should see Lawless. I'm not going to beg again, but please see Lawless. Now we're going to tell you what's coming out to DVD in theaters this coming week so that you can have a better informed viewing experience. Looking at DVD's release dates, we got a couple of things. I don't know if any of them are particularly awesome, but we have the 5-year engagement. Safe with Jason Statham.
Oh, Woman, my God.
Woman, Thou Art Loosed on the Seventh Day. I don't know what that is. Piranha 3 Double D.
Oh.
High School. And then
Airport.
What was that?
Airport.
Airport.
The tentpole from 1970. Airport.
Oh, awesome. We have some TV shows, one of which is Bored to Death, the complete third season. So I'd say that. You should watch.
Yeah, I haven't seen that season, but I'll get to it.
Excellent. Yeah, no, Bored to Death, good show. Everything else I haven't seen, or no, I just haven't seen any of these, so I can't make a judgment. Have either of you seen any of these films that are coming out?
I've seen like nothing here, actually. This is unexpected.
I've seen Safe, and it's not worth buying. So that's kind of my like recommendation. Like if you're thinking about buying Safe, maybe just don't, and then leave the store.
Is it
all right?
Is it possibly worth a rental?
It's not terrible. It, if you want to rent it, I'm not going to tell you not to, because it does have some fun Jason Statham moments. But you know, it's safe. So
safe entertainment.
It's just, you know what you're getting there.
All right. Well, done with that. Let's move on to some theatrical releases. We've got The Words, which, yeah, I don't even know. I haven't seen anything about this except for posters at the movie theater that make me not want to see it. So I'm not the one to talk to about that. We also have The Cold Light of Day, Bachelorette, Hello, I Must Be Going. I don't know what the hell the Inbetweeners movie is, so I'm going to move on. Keep the Lights On and Rec 3, or no, excuse me, Rec Cubed Genesis. And yeah, I'm going to be that douchebag who actually says cubed instead of three, even though I know it's a three.
Mm.
Because when you superimpose that three upwards, you know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to correct your mistakes for you. Any of these sound like something we should keep an eye out for?
I've seen Hello, I Must Be Going. It's not bad. Melanie Lynskey's very good in it. So there's that much.
I saw a trailer for that the other day.
Yeah.
Did the trailer appeal to you, Danny?
Yeah, she looked good.
All right. I have not.
Keep the Lights On is supposed to be good. I've heard good things, but haven't seen it.
I haven't honestly heard about any of these.
Do we know what we're reviewing?
No.
It's an excellent question. No, we don't, do we? That's not good. We'll figure it out.
So, just right. Keep going with the...
I mean, I like I said, I don't know what The Words is about. The Cold Light of Day, I feel like I saw a trailer 4 months ago and I remember nothing. Bachelorette, I saw Bridesmaids, so I don't feel like that needs to be. I mean, I've heard good things. I don't want to be too dismissive of that. I've heard it's pretty awesome. I have no idea what the hell the Inbetweeners movie is.
Based on a British show.
Yeah.
Or the continuation of a British show.
Yeah. And that's getting turned into an MTV TV show.
Already airing on
TV. Because them adapting awesome British television worked out so well for Skins. Yeah, yeah. I'm going to say that if there's anything that you haven't seen already. If you haven't seen, hey, here's an idea. Go see Paranorman, people.
Yeah.
That movie needs money, too. And like I said, I saw it again, and it was awesome. I'm doing my part. Are you? That's a pretty bleak week. We could do the words. A writer at the peak of his literary success discovers the steep price he must pay for stealing another man's work. I don't know that I'd want to see that. Because unless he gets brutally murdered at the end, I'd be really pissed off. Yeah, okay, so not a great week for theaters or DVDs. Maybe we can help you out getting through this odd off week for all cinematic releases by giving you some of our random recommendations. So, Danny, why don't you start us off? What have you seen this week that you think people should check out?
Well, I kind of cheated last week by picking two. So this week I'll just go with the Soderbergh Solaris, not because I like it better than the Tarkovsky one, but because I feel like it's kind of a bit easier to digest on one viewing. I feel like the original kind of has, it's longer for one thing. It's about an hour longer and it has a lot of hidden meanings and stuff that I feel like I will discover on multiple viewings. But the Soderbergh one is a very tight, compressed remake, but it doesn't lose the ideas of the original. And I think it's one of my favorite Soderbergh movies and one of George Clooney's best performances. So check that if you haven't.
Well, this is awkward. I just bought the Solaris Blu-ray, the Criterion.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously for Tarkovsky, and it was going to be mine.
Well, just, you know, you got to do what you got to do.
I'll choose something else, but I guess somehow you managed to get both remake and original in, just because that was going to be mine originally. Good work.
This is really awkward.
Well played, I guess. Since I won't be talking about how you should see the original Solaris, because Danny kind of already covered that base, I will say that you should watch Galaxy Quest. It's on heavy rotation on HBO right now for some reason. Not entirely sure why, but it's a fantastic film. It's from many years old now. Tim Allen plays basically a William Shatner type person who was on a cult sci-fi TV show, Galaxy Quest. A bunch of aliens got these TV shows, beamed up to them just, you know, through the diffusion of radio waves or whatever. They've built their society around it, and now they need his help to save the galaxy along with his crazy cast of characters. It's a fun, loving mockery of kind of geek culture, and it's really funny, and it's got a lot of heart, and you should see it. Anyone else seen Galaxy Quest?
I saw that in the theater, but I was way too young to really.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've seen it.
I saw it in the theater too, but I've seen it, you know, maybe once every 2 years since then. It's a fun movie. It's light, airy entertainment that like I said, it's got heart, it's got humor. It's everything you could want. And hearing Tim Allen screaming, "It's a rock, it doesn't have any weak spots," it never gets old. Nick, what about yourself? What have you seen lately that you think people should check out?
I watched a 6-film series this week, but I'm not going to recommend 6 movies at once because what good does that do you?
I don't know. You'd be like Danny.
I rewatched both Magnolia and Chungking Express yesterday, but I don't count rewatches.
You don't?
Which basically leaves me with one choice, and that's The Battle of Algiers by Guillo Pontecorvo. Classic movie, was on Sight and Sound's top 50 list, and finally got around to it. I actually bought the Blu-ray during the Barnes & Noble Criterion sale. Beautiful Blu-ray and a great movie, too. Thrilling and has a lot of moral ambiguity, I guess, is the word I'm looking for. I was trying to find some kind of analogy, but I couldn't come up with it. And great movie. Just watch it. You don't need me to tell you anything else.
All right.
Yeah, I've only seen clips from that one. I should get around to it.
I almost bought that at the same Barnes & Noble sale, which is where I bought Solaris. And I almost bought the Chungking Express. And Magnolia was mine last week.
Yeah.
It is a small world. this is the Magnolia of random recommendations. It's all interconnected. We're all just, all right, fuck it. Never mind. I'm done with that analogy. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us on another episode of the Film Stage Show. If you have any thoughts about Lawless, if you have any thoughts about our recommendations, if you want to give us your opinion on how much about a movie you'd like to know before going in to see it, you can always email us at podcast@thefilmstage.com. And I'm actually totally and completely serious about if you do a Charlie Rakes Halloween costume. I want to hear about it. I want to see it. Once again, it's not an official thing, so I'm not going to promise you anything other than maybe a little bit of notoriety. But hey, everyone loves being famous for 10 seconds, so do it. Gentlemen, why don't we tell the people at home where they can find us until next week? Nick, start us off.
Thefilmstage.com and twitter.com/Nick_Newman.
And Danny?
Thefilmstage.com, thekingbulletin.com, and twitter.com/thekingbulletin.
And you can find me on my personal blog, dearfilm.net. You can also find me on Twitter, twitter.com/BrianJRowan, and you can find me at the Filmstage. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us once again. Have an excellent week, watch something awesome, and we will talk to you next week. Which is, I don't know how to start this. This week's film discussion, we, need someone to punch me in the back of the head so my brain starts working.
Just say, to the wonder.
How about,
Now I got it.
Okay.
So...